Seth, In the Loop has an interesting idea for the Texans and fixing the offensive line, trading for Eagles star left tackle Jason Peters. The problem is, this seems totally unrealistic. No,
it's ridiculous. Jason Peters at that stage in his career where he was either going to come back for one more year with the Eagles or retire. And not to mention, he's had injury concerns and issues because he's old. He might be 49 years old by now. He is actually 36. I'm going to guess 36.
I think he's 36, yes.
I think that it's a really good idea by Landry. If somehow they could convince him, hey, you should come here and do it on on a reasonable contract, then yeah, I would leap at that. But everything I had read about Jason Peters was that he was contemplating retirement and could he be coaxed into coming back for one more year with the team that he won the Super Bowl with. And I'd be really, really, really surprised if he wanted to come to the Texans.
Yeah, I wouldn't be as surprised more on that part. I would just be more surprised if the Eagles were actually willing to let him go. Think about it. The Eagles are in a very similar spot to where the Texans are in that they want to protect their young, really good franchise quarterback, as do we. The problem is, for us, they have Jason Peters, and the Texans do not have anybody like that at left tackle.
Yeah, plus, let's see. Midway through the 2017 season, Peters' season was cut short after suffering a torn ACL and MCL. This year, he started every game, but he dealt with an array of injuries such as multiple quad injuries, a torn bicep, and a concussion.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's and this is what I would say right now. Anybody that's out there right now, I'm not taking on one more beleaguered, constantly injured player. I don't care who it is. I don't care if they discover the fountain of youth or a magical stem cell treatment over in Germany somewhere. I don't care, like, what it is. Like, I don't want another offensive tackle that's got a really good shot of getting injured. Because at this point, you're now at the point where you're talking about valuable roster spots that are going to be taken up by guys who are probably going to end up on IR at some point. Like, between Chantrell Henderson and Matt Khalil, I feel like there's a better than 50% chance that at least one of those guys ends up on IR, right?
They've started
very few games between the two of them over the last 3 years, mostly because of injuries. So I just don't expect one of those guys to stay healthy. I'm not going to bring yet another old person on board to take reps away from young guys and then get injured.
I mean, realistically, and you've made this point so far today, the main way the Texans improve their offensive line this offseason, this point, is the draft, right? I mean, that's the main way that they improve their offensive line, either taking someone at number 23 or just taking a few guys, including number 23. That's the way you improve this offensive line.
Yeah.
That's the way you get
it done.
And I would love the idea of Jason Peters, but there's no way the Eagles give him up. They have no incentive to get that done. They want to protect Carson Wentz as much as the Texans want to protect Deshaun Watson. They're not going to be willing to let him go.
You know what's getting interesting is a lot of the good defensive linemen out there, and Dominic Sue and a few other guys that are still out there because the defensive line in the draft is so good.
Yep.
So I think if the Texans were going to bring an interior defensive pass rusher onto the team, I think they would do it in the draft. And it's more on like taking a risk on somebody that's an undersized third or fourth or fifth rounder. They're not going to be doing it with one of their first two round picks.
I agree with you.
Unless maybe, I don't know. And Dominic Sue wouldn't be the guy.
I think they could sign an interior pass rusher, but I think it would be after the draft where they have a much better idea of where they are at offensive tackle, at cornerback, and the other needs like third running back, backup receiver, all those spots. I think once they kind of like take inventory of where they are after the NFL draft, then you might see one of those signings. And by the way, Mike and Seth on a Monday, Paul's back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. The NFL draft is very, very rapidly approaching. We are merely 10 days away from the first round of the NFL draft, which is in Nashville this year. And the Texans obviously have the number 23 overall pick in this draft. Mike and Seth on a Monday. Last night late, the Rockets annihilated the Utah Jazz 122-90. They controlled the action for most of the way. How possible is a sweep in this series? Because if they could get a sweep in this series, given who's next, that would be a very big deal.
There are a few things that probably aren't going to happen quite as easily as they did last night. One would be the rebounding. The Rockets out-rebounded the Jazz. The other would be how easily the Rockets scored in the paint. They had 62 points in the paint. They took it to the Jazz in all manner of ways, and they completely just... They minimized Rudy Gobert, who's one of the best defensive players in the league, but they had him, the Jazz were trying to have him do so many things last night, and Harden just dissected the Jazz. So I think that there's a good chance there's a sweep. I'm going to say, honestly, I would say 50-50 at this point.
50-50.
And a lot of that, is more based on Chris Paul than anything else. Chris Paul was just fantastic last night. Did Chris Paul look to you like Chris Paul of the last several months?
He looked like the Chris Paul that's been playing since he came back from the hamstring injury.
Okay, see, I felt like he looked even better than most nights since he came back from the hamstring injury.
I need to see more because we haven't seen him quite take over games like he did last year a few times in the playoffs.
I thought that the way he was moving and just the command he had on the court, it looked like he had an extra gear. And it's not like he's been bad since he came back from the injury, but there's been something missing. There's just something right there that when you saw him in ISO situations or other respects, he just didn't look like exactly the same guy. I felt like last night, okay, that's Chris Paul from the playoffs last year. That's Chris Paul that can help you take the Golden State Warriors to 7. Now there's some other guys on the Rockets that have to step up too. But I was very pleased with that. I'm curious to see what happens when, you know, you go with Fareed over Nene, and obviously that paid some dividends, but now that the Jazz know what it looks like with Fareed out there,
they'll attack him more.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, there's definitely going to be adjustments, just like last year where the Jazz came out in game 2 after getting crushed in game 1. They're very capable of being a much better basketball team than you saw last night.
I don't want to overreact to what happened last night. The Rockets are the better team and they'll win this series because the Jazz, I just don't think that they can keep up with the Rockets offensively. And one of their problems is that the best thing they have going, which is Rudy Gobert, is neutralized by the way the Rockets play offense. James Harden and the three-point shooting. But I want to go back to the idea of a sweep. I would love to be able to do that because if you look at the way this schedule shakes out, if they swept the Jazz, they'd be moving on to the second round of the playoffs by a week from today. That's going to be game 4. If they won in 5, it would be next Wednesday at home. So you still have a couple days before the second round would start. It would be really nice if they could sweep this series. But ultimately, I just think Utah's too good. Utah is going to take one of these games.
Well, the other thing you'd have to worry about, too, is Clint Capella. Because Clint, he was scrappy as hell last night. But it looked like he was having a hard time catching his breath at times. I mean, he's got an upper respiratory infection.
I feel like he'll be fine by Wednesday.
Questionable for the game. I know, but like an upper respiratory infection. You know what it's like when your lungs are burning and it's not working right and you're trying to, it's stale air, especially in a gym. It's awful. It's awful. And like, I think one extra night of rest can probably go a long way towards him feeling absolutely perfect in round 2. I would almost prefer like a sprained ankle or something to an upper respiratory infection just because that shuts down your whole system if it doesn't heal right. He's young and strong and everything, and I'm sure he's fine. But if he's on antibiotics right now, that wears you down. If this thing lingers at all any longer than it needs to, that makes me nervous for how he's going to fare deeper into the playoffs.
Sometimes these plus-minus stats can be a little bit deceiving. Not last night. Last night in Game 1, Rockets crushed the Jazz 122-90. Clint Capella was a +24, and Rudy Gobert was a -23. I mean, that's all you need to know about that matchup. Capella, again, outplays Gobert in the playoffs. This is why I was adamant a month or two ago when In the Loop called Capella the biggest question mark on this team going to the playoffs. I vehemently disagree with that. You can trust Clint Capella in the playoffs. I don't know how he's going to fare against DeMarcus Cousins, ideally in the next round, but I know I'm going to get my A performance from Capella. I know that he is going to bring it. I'm not worried about Clint Capella in the postseason.
And as far as the Jazz and how they defended Harden, like that's the Milwaukee Bucks strategy of forcing to go right. I read a bunch of stuff from smart people before this game talking about how that Bucks strategy has been blown way out of proportion, and that, you know, for one, Harden, like, it's been bothering me. People are acting like, oh, make him go right. Like, that's some exotic strategy that nobody had ever considered or thought of before. And he's actually not that much weaker going right than he is going left. I think if you have the personnel that the Bucks do, you can pull that strategy off pretty effectively and make it harder for Harden than it is otherwise. But he's still capable of dissecting it if he's making his shots. It made him less efficient as a scorer last night. So I suppose you could say, You could say maybe if that's all you're doing, then it's minimally effective. They didn't foul. You know what? Maybe that's the best part of that strategy of letting him go right. Because they don't even force him to go right. They let him go right.
Well, that was the problem, I thought.
And then you clog up the lane. But 3 free throws. So, like, when you clog the lane like that and you've got Gobert just sticking his big paw up in the air, you don't have to foul him. So maybe just by doing that alone and then making him a little bit more inefficient as a player, you detract from some of his greatness. You're not going to shut him down, obviously.
Maybe.
But maybe you minimize him enough. Remember when, Battier. Remember when Battier used to play Kobe? And they broke it all down to where, like, even though Kobe might score 35 points,
he made him work harder.
It was because Battier made Kobe work so hard and made him so much more efficient that it actually hurt the Lakers' chances of winning, even when Kobe had a bunch of points.
Well, I think the difference here is that this was like the basketball equivalent of, like, if you're seeing Peyton Manning or Brady in the shotgun, they're just like picking out receivers to throw to and picking out mismatches.
Right.
I thought, especially in the first half, really the whole game, but especially in the first half, they were letting Harden get by him so quickly, and he was just like picking out guys. Like, all right, I want PJ in the corner, or I want Daniel House in the corner, and I might go to the rim, I might hit a floater.
Were showing it way too early.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there was no disguise. It was like, hey, James, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna get in our exact spots, and this is what. And then yeah, they gave him too clear a picture. If they disguise it a little bit better, then maybe it has a chance.
Here's the big number. This to me is the number that matters the most. 10. James Harden had 10 assists last night. Forget about the points or the field goal percentage or anything else, turnovers, whatever. If James Harden has 10 assists against this basketball team, the Rockets are going to win because that means threes, that means open looks, and Harden's going to get his as well.